It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show. Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
This is the first ever Chris Van Vliet Show. Sounds good. Welcome! I'm Chris Van Vliet, and it means the world to me that you're listening to this right now, so I can't thank you enough for that. I know a lot of you are listening to this now because you've watched my interviews on YouTube, and that's been amazing. I mean, I started my YouTube channel 8 years ago, posting wrestling interviews, and over the last, year and a half or so, this has really grown into something special. And it's all because of you and because of this amazing thing that we call pro wrestling that unites us all together. Whether you like WWE, AEW, New Japan, Impact, Ring of Honor, Lucha, anything else, whatever it is, at the end of the day, it's wrestling, and we love it. So I have to say, this podcast has been a long time coming, probably too long. This probably should have happened a while ago, and I get it. It's not always easy watching a YouTube video for 30, 40, even 50 minutes like this one's going to be. So the plan here is to still upload to YouTube like we always do, and then put the audio version on here in podcast form so you can listen wherever, whenever you want. And hey, maybe you'll hear something on here and maybe you'll go, oh, I gotta see that. And then you'll go and you'll click on the YouTube video. So if you do like this, it'd be awesome if you went and left a 5-star review and share this so you can get the word out and let everybody know that the CVV show is now in town. So before we get to the very interesting conversation with Sean Spears, who you'll know from his time in WWE as the perfect 10 Ty Dillinger, the Chris Van Vliet Show is brought to you by Green Roads. And Green Roads CBD products have been a complete game changer for me. Unfortunately, not all CBD products are created equal. I mean, we've heard a lot about CBD over the last year or so, and a lot of companies have launched products hoping to cash in on that CBD boom with low quality formulas. And some of them don't even have actual CBD in them. Green Roads is a pharmacist-founded company dedicated to improving the lives of people who take it. People like me. The CBD oil is super simple to take. Just a few drops under your tongue, and it's really helped me focus. I'm not really a stressy person, but I've got a lot going on these days with YouTube and launching this podcast and my day job and traveling the world. And it kind of helps my brain go from like a 16-lane highway down to like a 4-lane highway. Also, the Relax gummies have been amazing and taste just as good as actual gummy bear candies. So use my code CHRIS15 to get 15% off your order at greenroadsworld.com. CHRIS15 for 15% off. The CVV show also brought to you by Samson Technologies, which is the audio equipment that I am using as we speak. If you're looking to start your own podcast or upgrade your current equipment, I highly recommend Samson. Perception's reality, right? So in order for people to think that you're running a professional podcast, you have to sound like a professional podcast. And Samson, as you can hear, makes me sound like $1 million. And they're incredibly affordable. So go to samsontech.com to check out their product offerings. And because I know you're going to ask, I personally use Samson's Pro Podcasting Pack. Now, you know Ty Dillinger from the WWE. He asked for his release from WWE back in February. He was granted it, which is actually a pretty amazing feat in itself, because a lot of superstars have been denied their release, time added on for some people too. So he now goes by Sean Spears. We talk about why he thinks he got his release, him turning down what he called a substantial raise from WWE, his fiance Peyton Royce, his appearance at Double or Nothing, and so much more. And I think before I throw to this, I got to point out that we did this interview just a few days before his official announcement that he had signed with AEW. So, by the way, congratulations to Sean for that. So, with all that said, here we go. The very first episode of the CVV show, the Chris Van Vliet show, with the perfect 10, Ty Dillinger, a.k.a. Sean Spears.
We are at Disney World right now. The happiest place on earth.
Well, it depends who you ask.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite busy. The parking is insane. There's lots of people. I don't get along well with lots of people bumping into me. So it depends who you ask. But I'm happy to be here now. Finally, we did this. We're doing this now. It's going down, and it's going down at Disney.
Yeah, and so I'm here for work right now. You live close-ish, but thank you for making this happen.
Nah, no problem. I've been looking forward to this. I kept you in mind. As you can tell, I'm not wearing a suit. I wanted to make sure after your last video with Ryback saying you felt a little inadequate in terms of underdressed, I wanted to make sure I didn't make you feel awkward, especially here at Disney. So, you know, I was thinking of you, pal.
Well, I'm wearing pants and you're not, so maybe you're the one underdressed now.
Now it's a party.
Yeah.
when I don't wear pants, it's a party.
On the Edging Christian podcast, you're like, I'm half dressed right now and I won't tell you which half.
Eating chicken wings. Yeah. Made for a hell of a moment with a bunch of Canadians, which you're Canadian as well.
I am Canadian.
Ah, that just makes sense. Yeah. If you're not Canadian, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Not everyone's perfect.
If you're not.
Ooh. Get it? All right, sorry. All right, wow. I'm done messing around.
I think there's going to be a lot of messing around.
Probably.
Congratulations on everything since leaving WWE. I feel like you've been just crazy busy.
Things have been good. I just got back into the swing of things last Friday. Started off in New York with Create a Pro, which was really fun. And then I just had my last show with XWA in, oh my God, where was I? Providence. So I did like 5 shows in the span of 6 days already out of the gate. So it was good to get back in there full swing and hit the ground running immediately. So good thing I tried to stay in shape that whole time that I was off, because I would have been dying.
Well, just 90 days, right?
90 days, but 90 days. I had an injury kind of before that. So I think I'd returned from that for maybe a month. So I had a couple singles matches, but overall I've been out of the ring for kind of a while.
Yeah.
So to be thrown back into the mix and go 15, 20 minutes with a lot of young, talented passionate young talent is you got to keep up or you get left behind.
I think a lot of people saw you for the first time in a while at Double or Nothing. Mm-hmm. And this is a new look. Or if they're seeing you now for the first time, this is a new look. What inspired this?
A change just when I was off. 3 months off with an injury. I had pins in my hands. So it took a while. So, you know, if anybody's been following my career, it's had its lows. It's had its ups and it's had its downs. And during that downtime, it's like it's time for something to change. So it was more of checking off personal boxes for myself. And one of them was when I was coming back, it's like, all right, let's change things up. Let's give them something different. Let's give them something to work with. And so that involved losing half of my hair. It involved changing up my look, my gear. This was new. This has been in the works for years. But I came back just looking totally different, hoping that would kind of spark some interest and some change.
So this is what Sean Spears looks like, and that was what Ty Dillinger looked like.
Essentially, this is me. This is more of me completely open, wide open, and unrestricted.
What was it like stepping out into the Battle Royal at Double or Nothing?
Nerve-wracking. I was asked this later after the show, after the big event had taken place, during media scrum that you were part of as well. It was nerve-wracking, man. I was scared shitless. Oh, I don't know if I could swear on this.
Sure, it's the internet.
Can you beep everything? Or here, there's your part for if you need to cut it. I cuss like a sailor.
That's fine.
All right.
Whatever you need.
Beautiful. Well, then there it is. I was scared shitless because I've been gone for so long and my career in WWE wasn't exactly how I had hoped it would be, especially coming from NXT and the momentum of the Perfect 10 character. You know, the reality is if you tell people something long enough, good or bad, eventually they're going to start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while I was, you know, the picture painted was that I wasn't exactly a favorable character. I wasn't exactly a character that was going to be utilized to a certain extent. This is what it is and here's what it is and you can take it or leave it. So coming off of that and being hurt and then leaving, a lot of time had gone by, a lot of low time had gone by. So coming out at Double or Nothing, I was like, my God, I just hope people remember. I hope people react and I hope people care that I'm here tonight. That was my biggest fear. Scared shitless.
But it's a battle royal. You've done many of those before. You know?
It wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered if I was first in that battle royal out the gate, or wouldn't have mattered if I was Jericho or Kenny's spot, or if I was in Mox's spot. It wouldn't have mattered where I was on that show on that night because it was the event. It was the event that everybody was talking about. It was a turning point in the world of professional wrestling. Cody said it best. It's a revolution. And I think it's been something that people have been waiting for so long, and now finally, all right, someone gave it to you. Here it is.
Yeah.
And that, and you know what I mean? You get a little smirk on your face now thinking about it because you were there.
I was there.
So you felt it. Yeah. I sat behind the curtain because I was able to watch a huge screen, but I was able to be right behind the curtain so I can hear the audience live as it's happening. Mm. And you, all night, just the goose. I get goosebumps kind of thinking about it now. Like they weren't going to stop. They were ready for something. They got what they were looking for, and the world's off and running.
So you must have been happy to just have any role in that, play any role in that night.
When the opportunity came up, I dove through I didn't care what it was. I didn't even talk about the businessman side of me went out the window. I didn't give a damn. The opportunity came up. My 90 days expired the night before.
Wow.
The day before.
Was that coincidental?
I don't know. WWE is very, you know, they knew that Double or Nothing had been announced at the time that I had asked for my release. They're not silly. They have their thumb on the pulse of what's happening in the wrestling world. I asked for my release on my birthday, February 19th. I was verbally granted it on Friday. So I think that was like the 22nd or something. But I needed the paperwork officially. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that till the following week. Had they waited an extra 24 hours, I would not have been able to do Double or Nothing. So I think WWE was being gracious. They knew what was going on. I think they allowed me to be out at that time to do whatever I wanted to do, including Double or Nothing. I could be completely wrong, and they might have slipped their minds. I don't know. I like to think that I had earned that mutual respect. So either way, I got to be there.
That's very generous of them, because we hear these stories of people asking for their release and they say, no, we're not letting you out of your contract and we're adding time on because you were injured.
Well, I got asked this the other night by a young talent at an NXWA show. He goes, why do you think you got out and no one else did? That's tough to answer, because no one else was granted their release. And it's one of two things. It's one of three things. Maybe it was a mutual respect that I had built up with them. I was with them for 8.5 years total, mm-hmm. including my first time around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did things right. Never got in any trouble. I was professional and carried myself well and, you know, always did what I was asked to do. So that was one thing. The other thing is that statement that I put out later that evening on the 19th, February 19th, it kind of handcuffed them a little bit. So if they would have kept me, that might have made a lot of people unhappy. If they would have kept me and utilized me in a negative way, or, you know, had me get killed on TV every week again, that probably would have made people upset. I think it put me in the best position possible to get what I was looking for. And the third possible reason is maybe they didn't see anything in me. And they go, you know what? We don't see any value. It is time to go, so go ahead. And to be honest with you, I really hope it's that one. I really, really do, because that just fuels a little more fire, and that just makes things. I'll make that up in my mind, whether it's truth or not.
It's like
I'm gonna
chip
that's
on your shoulder.
That's the one I'm gonna keep rotating in my mind. That okay, that's the reason they let it go. So all right.
If you were to let things go with your contract, when was it supposed to expire?
WrestleMania of 2020.
Oh, so another year plus.
It would have been a year plus. And this has been about 6 months in the works, this release. I wouldn't have made it another year. Huh. Wouldn't have made another year. It was just affecting my home life. Not in the sense that people may think. It was just affecting, like, when I got home and I had 2 days off, instead of enjoying those 2 days off, I was always dreading leaving that third day already. The second I got home, I was like, I got to leave in 2 days. My gosh.
Which I think a lot of people can relate to. Like, you know, maybe they got a job they don't like going to on Mondays. And then they can't even enjoy Sunday because they know Monday's the next day.
Yes. And, you know, when you're, and I don't mean to sound condescending to any, but when you're younger, that's how you're going to feel. When you're older, you kind of go, this is not the way I should be feeling about things. This is not, I you know, time is valuable. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things they're not making in life anymore. Two things you're not going to get any more of: land or time. So they ain't making any more of that. So it becomes, that's to me, the ultimate currency is time. You can't get any of it back. So I had to kind of sit back and go, all right, what is most important to me in my life at this stage of my career? Mm-hmm. I'm much closer to the end of my career than I am at the beginning. So how do I want to remember this when I'm 70?
Yeah.
And that's what it ultimately boiled down to in terms of leading up to my requesting my release.
Did you factor in that you being released or asking for your release might somehow affect your future wife, Peyton Royce?
We had discussed it, how it would impact her career. Never came up. Because when I had initially brought it up, she was open to speaking about it, talked about it, and we did on numerous occasions. And then finally, as she can see, like that, nothing was changing, nothing was getting better. My mentality in terms of what I was bringing home with me, bringing work home with you, wasn't getting any better. And eventually she just said to me, like, look, I need you happy. And I don't care how that is. I don't care where that is. I just know that going forward for the rest of our lives, for our future children and for our household now, I need you happy. So whatever it is you need to do to make yourself happy, I am with you 100%. Wherever you go, I'm with you 100%. And, you know, she has my back. And when you find someone like that, man, put a ring on it. Put a ring on it. Lock it down. Lock it down. But she has been my utmost number one supporter, my number one fan, and my best friend through all of this. So in terms of business-wise, it probably helped because she won the tag team championships like a month later at WrestleMania. And that's the other thing too, you know, something like I was there, I was at WrestleMania. So I had already requested my release. I think I had like another month or maybe just over a month left on my 90-day. And I was backstage at WrestleMania and I said, you know, I'd like to be down ringside. They took me down. They put me and sat me beside the McMahon family. And I got to watch her live win the Women's Tag Team Championships live. And then they, as soon as they were done, they pulled me to the back. And that was the last time I'd been at WWE. But, you know, so I don't know if a lot of people are sitting here waiting for me just to hammer them into the ground or whatever like that. Like, look, I had my problems with them. But they have also been very gracious and have done things for me that meant a lot to me. And that meant the world to her. Because her family's from Australia. They couldn't make it. So to have somebody and her family there ringside like everybody else did meant the world to her. So that I thank WWE for sure.
But now you're on the outside looking in and you're obviously very knowledgeable about what goes on in there. Are you not looking at this going, how are you able to still work for this company that treat people like this?
Everybody has a different story. You know, a lot of the big stories right now are people that are not being granted their release. You know, Sasha Banks is a big story right now because kind of MIA at the moment. I look at it now from a personal standpoint. I don't really put myself in anybody else's shoes because I can't. But I look at it from my personal point of view, and I know that I made the right decision. I know I made the right call for me, professionally and personally. It's difficult because I look at the product and I'm able to see the issues that I still felt were issues back then. And now with a big company as competition that have had one show and they are already the second biggest company pretty much in the world.
Yes.
That is massive. And that is going to shake the foundation of WWE, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, that is happening. It's happening because I see it and I hear about it. I hear about the scrambles. I hear about the, you know, we're an hour into TV and we're still writing shows. Like, it happens. That's business. That's the way this goes. It moves quick, it moves fast, and you better keep up. But I mean, everybody has their own path. I don't really look at them in terms of how they're treating people. I look at it as an overall product and I go, they're gonna have to change things up. They're gonna have to step things up if they want to continue on the path in terms of what's important, and that's giving the audience a product that they want to see. And that starts with credibility.
Well, you mentioned you were in WWE for 8.5 years. You've been at every single AEW show, all one of them. What would you say is the biggest difference between the product between the two of them?
The biggest difference, probably credibility. I had this, one of the last conversations I had with Vince, I went into this to his office and he gave me, anytime I've asked to speak to Vince, he's always given me the time of day. He's always responded to a text message. He's always, all that kind of stuff, which has been great. But this had been a time, this was closing in on the time that I asked for my release a few months out. And I just went in, I needed to say what I needed to say. And the difference, biggest difference in between both companies, but especially at that time, was credibility. Talent needs credibility. They don't necessarily need pushes. Everybody talks about, oh, you should push this guy. You should push this guy. I see it all over the internet all the time. Oh, they're burying Bobby Roode, or they're burying Finn Balor, or they're burying, these are all guys that are decorated champions. Like, not everybody needs a push, but talent does need credibility. If you are watching the product and two guys come out and you're able to already tell what the finish is of that match based on entrances alone, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Because now we're giving an audience an opportunity to change a channel. We're giving them the opportunity to do this on their phone. They're not, they don't care. Mm-hmm. They're not invested. And that is what I said to the chairman. And I said, with all due respect, I think we're insulting their intelligence. And he kind of just looked at me and went, oh, shit. But I still stand by that sentiment today. It was never about being pushed into that limelight. The hardest schedule ever is a champion schedule. Mm. It is wild. I've seen it with multiple people. I've seen it with Charlotte Flair when she was a women's champ. She's never home. She's home once a month. Mm. It's wild. Like, that is the hardest schedule in professional wrestling, is a champion schedule. So there are people that are champions that are like, oh my God, I just want to go home. I just want to be home for a week, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not about pushes. It's about credibility. What AEW is doing is, if you watched that 7-card lineup, everybody had the time. Everybody had the opportunity to make themselves a star. They're already a star, but now we're introducing everybody to a worldwide audience. Mm-hmm. When I say we, I mean like AEW as a whole. They're introducing everybody to a worldwide audience, different people from different parts of all over the world. And here you go, showcase your talents, do what you can. You don't really have any restrictions, just stay in the parameters of what we laid out. Do your thing.
Wow.
Everybody on that show was a star. Yep. And if they weren't walking in, they were afterwards. Mm-hmm. Everybody walked out with credibility.
Yeah.
A lot of people you saw in that battle royal you might have never seen before in your life. Now you're going to go, oh, man.
Yes.
Wow. Who's Jungle Boy?
Yep.
Who's that MJF guy? You know what I mean? Hangman Page.
Yeah.
He's now facing Chris Jericho for the world championship. He has a chance to make himself a worldwide name in one night. That's a difference. Credibility is key for the audience because it gives them something to care about.
So if I play devil's advocate here, you were offered more money to stay in WWE. Mm-hmm. You could have just taken the money, sat back, toured around with your wife, and, you know, called it a career. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because I'm scared shitless of regret later in life. I don't think that I'm old. I just, like, a lot of people say you grow in your 30s, you know what I mean? Or a lot of young people worry about if they're 26, 27, 28, oh, I don't know what to do with my life. Here's a spoiler alert. You're not supposed to know what to do with your life when you're 20. Your 20s are not for figuring out what you want. Your 20s are for figuring out what you don't want. Mm. Then in your 30s, you gear towards what you want.
Yeah.
So for me, I am able to look 30, 40 years down the road when I'm 70. And my body doesn't work anymore because I've beaten it up for almost 18 years now. I can't barely remember what I did my first 5 years of my career. Mm. So when I'm 70, if I'm lucky, I'm going to be able to remember the last three. How do I want to remember those? I said it on the Edge and Christian podcast. I did not too long ago, too. It's going to matter to me when I'm 70 and I'm not mobile and I can't do much else with my life other than think. I'm going to think about three things: whether I was a good person, whether I was a good father, and whether or not I lived a life worth living. Mm. And that includes what I did with my career. So did I settle for money that I can no longer use, that it's no use to me anymore? It might support my family, great, but it's no use to me, selfishly. Or am I going to be able to, when all I can do is think back and smile and go, I did it on my terms. I finished the matches the way I wanted to. I went out of my in-ring career the way I wanted to. Those things later on in life are all that I'm going to be able to think about. And that was the deciding factor when asking to leave. I didn't let them get the number out when they said, we're going to give you a substantial raise. I just went, it's not going to change how I feel tomorrow morning when I wake up. Mm-hmm. So that is what it ultimately boils down to, is not regretting anything in my life later on.
That's powerful. It really is.
Or stupid, depending on how you look at it. Some people, it's hard to say, like, oh my, you walked away from a lot of money. Well, it's easy to say that when you've had money. I'm not a millionaire. I still need to work. I still need to go out and work. But I just know that for me personally, and that's just me, that money at that time, it's not going to matter.
Hmm. Are you officially signed with AEW?
No. We have put nothing on paper. We have talked. I've met everybody. I've met, which is crazy. I've been doing this for almost 18 years, and I just met the Bucks, and I just met Kenny for the first time at Double or Nothing. Yes, at Double or Nothing. We'd never crossed paths earlier on in my career when I was on the Independents before I got signed the first time. I never dipped into the States. I was never an indie name. I never had a big following, nothing like that. And even after my first time in WWE, same thing. I didn't have a big independent following. It wasn't until I got a following until NXT. So we never crossed paths. I know Cody. I've known Cody since OVW. I know his family very well. And I met the Khan family. I met Tony and his father at Double or Nothing. So we all seemed to get along. We all had a good time. We all had some laughs. And we're all very, very proud of the show that they put on. So that was pretty much the basis of just enjoying the weekend. Again, I wasn't concerned with contracts at the time. I wasn't concerned with anything like that. I just wanted to enjoy being a part of history that night.
So were you signed to kind of like an indie deal that night for Double or Nothing? Like a handshake will pay you X amount of dollars for that night?
It was a one-off, yep. It was a, hey, here's an opportunity, because the card was booked. So, I reached out to a good friend of mine, and I said, hey, just so you know, my 90 days expires on this date. And he goes, call me when it's expired. He's like, let me know when it's expired, but until then, I can't really talk. And I said, okay. And then it expired the 24th. I said, hey, man. And he's like, let's do it. Let's go ahead. So he's like, but the card's fully booked. It's been booked for months and promoting it. So I go, I don't care where you put me. Just get me out there in front of Vegas.
Yeah.
And I'm sure hopefully they'll do their thing. And they did. They showed up in spades or diamonds.
Yeah.
So it worked out. It worked out very, very well for everyone involved. But yeah, that's all it was. Hey, would you like to do this? Yes, absolutely.
Was there one specific thing that happened or didn't happen in WWE that kind of was the catalyst for you to go, I don't want to do this anymore?
There wasn't one specific thing. It was just a combination of missed moments, of missed opportunities. And you have to understand, when you sign up for something like that, when you work for a company like that, a lot of the times good things will fall through the cracks. And what I mean by that is a lot of guys are picked ahead of time, that before they walk in those doors, I'm bringing this guy in. This is going to be my guy. I'm going to mold him. I'm going to shape him. I'm going to introduce him to the audience the way I perceive him. And whether or not something else on the side is getting popular or getting really rolling or is bigger than what I had initially planned, doesn't matter. I'm going this way. I think in NXT, at the peak of the Perfect 10 Characters popularity, I believe he should have had an NXT championship run. Not for the fact that it's a championship and you should win the title, but because the story, and I had pitched it. I had pitched winning the NXT title, I believe, at a takeover on a Saturday, and then losing it immediately at the NXT TV tapings, I think on the Wednesday, like 4 days later.
Wow.
Because it wasn't about the title. It was about the story. It was about the climb. Being in WWE, being released, fighting for 5 years, getting back, almost getting fired again. And then Perfect 10 is born. And then, hold on, people start gravitating. Then people start carrying it. Now all of a sudden I'm in bigger matches, marquee matches.
And couldn't ignore it.
With all your top guys. And then now I'm working Bobby Roode. And when they asked Bobby, they said, who do you want to work with for the championship? Bobby showed me the text message. He goes, Ty Dillinger. And they said, sorry, there's other plans for him. So no. And I just kind of went, oh, it was about the story, the overcoming, the coming back, and then finally capturing, yes. And then we can go ahead and drop it. We would give everybody a feel-good moment of it happened. He did it.
Yeah.
I'll watch that movie. I don't care who's playing the role. I'll watch that movie all day long.
Yeah.
Like that's inspiring. That those moments are what creates movies.
So was it you going to the main roster that maybe the beginning of the downfall for your character?
I don't know. I'm looking back at it now. Yeah, there was no plan. There was no plan in place. I was up there for probably almost 2 years, and there was never an angle. I was never put in a storyline. The closest I had to a storyline was when I was kind of in the mix with AJ Styles and Baron Corbin for the United States Championship, but I was put in there to keep them apart for, I think it was 5 weeks until they had a pay-per-view match. They had a match at Hell in the Cell, and I don't know if I'm supposed to be telling, I don't know if he'll appreciate this, but I was put in there for about 5 weeks or so to keep them apart so they didn't have to wrestle each other every single week, and people would get like, okay, we get it, until the pay-per-view. But during that time, people started going, huh, okay, like this actually works. And I was having some good matches with AJ, and he was, you know, phenomenal in the ring, and he was great to work with. And then I was working a little bit with Corbin, and we had some, you know, ins and outs. And then by the time the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view rolled around that year, they had still Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles, and everybody thought we were leading towards a triple threat. And it took both those guys, AJ and Baron, going and knocking on Vince's office and going, you need to put him in this match now. Like, everybody wants it. Everybody sees it. Let's put him in the match. They went to Vince and had me put in that match that night.
Wow.
So that's how I got in that triple threat match. I wasn't supposed to be in it originally. So hats off to those guys. Respect to those guys, because they were not selfish at all. They were very, they've always, those kind of guys are always fantastic to work with.
The 10 count was so over that I would say it almost became like the what chant.
Oh, it was a pain in the ass.
Because you can't actually hear the ref's 10 count.
I can't. Like, that's a lot of people, I would get like, I would see it on Twitter and I'd giggle because everybody's like, oh, this 10 stuff's annoying. It's only good if it's in a match. And other people were just like, this is bullshit. Like, and even other wrestlers like this, okay, because it was on Independence too.
Yeah, it was everywhere.
So a lot of wrestlers were just like, hey, dude, we get it. Like, I was like, no, dumbasses. Like, when I'm on the outside, I can't hear shit either. I'm sitting there going, what numbers? He's on 8. Oh, I got to go. I got to get in because I can't hear nothing either. But it's just one of those things where, and I'd like to think it's, you know, I didn't find that character, I think, until about 14 years in. And that audience, the NXT audience and stuff like that, or anybody that had been following my career for a great period of time, had seen me try something and try this, and they were just, there's some horrible ideas that I tried, and they were just...
Were you a dealer at one time?
I actually was a card dealer at a casino, and I was trying to do... But even I didn't know what the hell I was trying to do. I had a deck of cards, and if I flipped the ace of spades, I think it was, which is weird how it ended up double or nothing, like how things... But if I rolled that, then you were in shit, but like the whole deck was like aces. I don't know. It was like the dumbest thing in the world, and it made no sense, and I couldn't connect it. And then I tried like a germaphobe thing, but it was like a playoff of like Gorgeous George back in the day. It was funny, but you have to be able to, whatever character you come up with, for you young kids that are watching this right now that are in the business that are having that hard time finding a character, whatever you come up with, it has to be able to translate into the ring. It has to be able to flow seamlessly into what you do inside the ropes as well. And that was all these different other character ideas. It was hard to bring them into the ring and have it make sense.
Yeah.
There was a disconnect until this 10 thing took off, and then I think when people finally saw it, they went, okay, we like this.
Yeah.
And much to WWE's dismay, or Triple H's dismay, you know, when it came on the scene full-fledged was that TakeOver, I think the end, and I worked Andrade, CN, and it was supposed to be, you know, babyface CN versus bad guy Perfect 10, but they weren't ready to boo me. And I think they just finally said, we like this, go with this. This is good. This is for you. And they just took it to heights no one saw coming.
And you told the story on Edge and Christian's podcast about how you created the character. And it's almost like serendipitous how this came together.
It was, it's ridiculous how it came together, because it came together out of anger. It came together out of things I was not supposed to see. I remember I was home. I don't know when it was. I wasn't taken to a big event. One year, they took like 40 talent, and I was not one of them. And I was furious, because I'm like, you tell me I'm not in the top 40 here? And this is, right. I need to say this, because this is very important. This is pre-Matt Bloom era. When Matt Bloom took over NXT, everything turned for the better for everyone. Mm. So this was pre his coming in. He saved my career. But when I had, you know, angry, I was at home and I was talking to one of my best friends back home, and I was just venting left, right, and center. And
so this was the Bill DeMott era.
This was the Bill DeMott era. Yeah, I said his name. I don't like to say his name.
We can call him Hugh Morris.
You can call him
humorous.
Oh, he's humorous, all right. So what had happened was I had seen how they were reviewing talent at the time. So at the end of the month, they would do reports on talent. And they would send it up so everybody's informed of what's going on, you know, down below. And I actually got my eyes and hands on some of them that required, you know, everything about me. And they're a few pages long and stuff like that. And essentially, you know, there's a chart, and you're ranked from 1 to 10 across the board in terms of in-ring. You get, you know, athleticism, in shape, promo, you know, experience, or you get, you know, attitude, things like that. And across the boards, and every coach has their, you know, and then the final say at the bottom is your head coach at the time. He ranks you, and then his paragraph, what he thinks overall, not any of the coaches. So every other coach is giving me nines and 9.5s, and I'm getting a 10 here, and I'm getting a nine here, and whatever like that. And it gets down to the head coach, and I'm getting sixes, and I'm getting 5.5s, and I'm getting sixes, and I'm getting 5.5s. And then his description of what he feels overall in terms of where I'm at in my career isn't very flattering as well. And I just went, all right, well, I'm dead in the water here. I'm dead in the water. So I was home venting to a buddy about that, and I was just saying, this is crockish. There's no one there that's a 10. He's gotta be giving this guy a 10, that guy a 10. And just in passing, I stopped for a second, and I was just quiet, and my buddy just goes, dude, if there's anybody there that's a 10, it's you. You've been doing it forever. Like I don't know what else to tell you. And he kind of just walked off, and I left me for a second. I kind of just hung on that statement. I don't know why. And for the next few days, it wasn't like I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just like you were talking here, but we would be talking right now, and a 10 would pop into my mind, and then we would keep talking. But that's how it was. It would just hang out for a while.
Right.
And I remember going back, and I remember talking to a few people about it. One guy I talked about it to was Tyler Breeze, because we have a very similar NXT career path and main roster path too, kind of. Because he was very immersed in finding a character and stuff like that, and he had found Tyler Breeze. And he's like, there might be something with this 10 thing, man. Start thinking about it. We would scheme some ideas, and eventually I had a little pitch together. So I sent an email to all the coaches at the time. Everybody said, let's get into the conference room. And I had t-shirts made up. That's all I had. That's all I had was Perfect 10 t-shirts. And I go, and I walked in, and I got them all together and sat them all down in the conference room. And Dusty Rhodes was sitting to my left. And I love Dusty more than anything, because for many reasons, but one, because he was always brutally honest with me. He never steered me wrong. He didn't give a shit about politics, at least not then and there, or at least not with me. But I sat down, and he said, baby, listen, before you pitch whatever it is you have pitched, and I'm sure it's good, he goes, I just need you to know that at this moment, there's never a whisper of you ever going up to the main roster.
Wow.
And I went, oh, shit. He goes, I just want to be straight up with you right now. That's where you're at right now. And that was huge for me, because I'm like, okay, because I have a feeling about this. And I was like, okay, well, coming off of that, here's this idea I got. And I kind of laid out the Perfect 10 and the concept of it, because I didn't have any pieces in play in terms of how I was going to present it, but I presented a concept. And it was kind of like, okay. And Dusty, his wheels, he sees something.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You can give him a pile of shit, and he'll find a way to turn it into a brick of gold. That's just how Dream works. And he was the only one that was kind of like, you know, everybody else was kind of like, maybe. But I wasn't allowed to do anything for 2.5 months. Wasn't allowed to do it on live events. I was told no on numerous occasions. Hey, can I try this? Hey, can I try this? Hey, can I try this? No, no, no. Wasn't allowed to do it. So I had planned to leave. Then I went, okay,
And this is how many years ago?
Oh, man. When did I find the 10 thing? This was probably about 2014, maybe 15.
Wow. So that saved your career.
This was me. Yes, 100%. Me and Jason Jordan got pulled into a room. And I'm sorry, JJ. We got pulled in. This is when we were tagging. We got pulled into the room at the same time. And they go, okay, guys, this tag team's not working out, which it wasn't. We didn't have a hook. You both have 3 months to figure it out. Wow. Okay. So in 3 months, I found the Perfect 10 thing, and then I was still told no. Combination of that with the reports that I'm seeing, I'm like, I'm dead in the water anyway, and I am not getting fired twice. So I was getting ready to leave. But then fate steps in, however way you want to spin it or look at it, and Matt Bloom takes over. I went up to him the day, I think they'd come back from somewhere again that I wasn't taken to because of the previous, and I said, hey, can I talk to you today after? And he goes, come visit me in my office, but please don't leave, come talk to me. And I knocked on his door, and I said, look, this is, and he stopped. He says, look, he goes, don't leave. Whatever you have in your back pocket, whatever you have ready to go, go. You have free reign, go. Just let it all loose. Let it rip, go. And I went, oh, okay. And the rest, he started putting me in matches with the Finn Balors and the Nakamuras and the Bobby Roods and the Samoa Joes and the upper guys.
Yeah.
Conditioning the audience, giving me credibility in their eyes, plus letting me, you know, work on the shtick that I got going on and work out the kinks. And everybody would add little ideas and posters and signs, and everybody, and then all of a sudden you have something and it takes off. And Matt Bloom, 100% across the board, he saved my career because I was ready to leave then.
Wow. And you coming out at number 10 in the Rumble was obviously very special for you, but special for us too as a fan. Like, to see that all kind of come together was incredible.
And I didn't think it was going to. About 3 weeks before, or probably about a month before, I started seeing rumblings on Twitter. Like, oh, it would be funny if, you know, Dillinger came out at number 10. I'd be like, oh, that would be kind of funny. But it's the Royal Rumble. There's only 30 spots. We have 200 talent.
Yeah.
And then as, you know, the days went on, it started to kind of pick up momentum. And probably about, like, maybe 2.5 weeks out, we were at an NXT TV taping, and I went up to Hunter and Michael Hayes, and I said, hey, you know, it's not getting huge traction, but what if I came out at number 10 in the Rumble? You know, and I don't have to lack in the last 10 seconds. It doesn't matter. Like, but it just, it solidifies this number 10 thing, and it could be a pretty cool moment. That kind of went, huh. And then Michael said, well, I don't have the Rumble booked yet, but we'll let you know. I was like, cool. Okay, I feel good. I threw it out there, and Hunter just kind of went, hmm. And I heard nothing for weeks. Now it's takeover, San Antonio. I'm getting ready to work Eric Young. I've heard nothing about the Rumble the next night.
Before, yeah.
And of course, that's out of my mind now because I'm working Eric Young. I'm focused on the task at hand. And the way that setup was that night was you had to go through Gorilla, go through the curtain. You had to walk down a little bit of a corridor, then around the corner, and then out. Well, I was in the middle of that corridor while the package was playing. So I was already out of Gorilla. I just wasn't in front of the audience yet. And as the package is winding down, I'm first out the gate. Hunter steps through the curtain. He goes, hey, tear it up tonight. You're in the Rumble tomorrow. And walks back into Gorilla. And I'm like, what the? 10? Oh, shit. And then out I go. So he literally told me the second I was getting ready to go out to have a match at TakeOver, he decided to spring it on me then.
Did that affect your match?
Not one bit. He did it because, you know, as a gag, like, he knows what he's doing, you know, and, sure. and looking back, I couldn't help but smile. I'm like, focus, get your shit together. And then, no, it didn't affect my match at all, because it's weird when you go through the curtain. It's anything you're feeling, whether it's, you know, elation, or you're sad, or you're beat up, or you're sore, or you're half broken, or, you know, you're limping, when you go through, it's like a whole new, it's something just turns out, I can't explain it, but everything goes away, and you dial in. It's really weird. It's, you almost... You're looking around, but you don't see people. Huh. It's odd. It's very odd. But when you get that dialed in, man. So I was. That's how I was. When those takeover, I took those takeovers. So every one of those was, for me, that was my main event pay-per-view of whatever was around at the time. That was my SummerSlam. That was my WrestleMania. That was my, you know, Survivor Series. Whatever it was, I took those first matches of those first those takeovers were. They were everything to me. So
the interview that you did backstage after the Royal Rumble, it was so genuine and authentic. Like you could tell that this was like the culmination of your entire career, being able to be out there at the Rumble. And it just felt so authentic that you're like, I don't even have words right now.
The most important, like, being out there was great, and seeing the people, you know, and being in the spot that I was in. Because when I came out, it was just pretty much, I think Sammy and Braun Strowman were running, but Braun was standing just by himself. So I had a spotlight. But it was just before I went out, probably about 90 seconds to 2 minutes I went out, because everybody's in Gorilla. I'm the next one out, and people, you know, my peers, people that I admired and respected for a very long time, worked with for a very long time, were genuinely happy for me. Hmm. When they started counting down the clock, they started, all my peers, I think it was just a lot of them knew what I had been through. A lot of them had seen me put in the work, and it was just that meant more to me that night than anything else. So what you saw in that interview afterwards, that was probably what I was carrying me. That thought at that moment during that that interview was just the admiration from your peers or from people that you truly admire is second to none. It goes beyond any fame or stardom or anything like that, because whatever you leave behind, whatever legacy you have, that those are the people that are going to carry it for you. You know what I mean? The people that speak about you and how they speak about you speaks volumes to your character.
Yeah.
So I take my reputation very seriously, and that night meant the world to me just based on that alone.
Do you think that if you never got called up to the main roster, if you just stayed in NXT, that you'd still be an employee of WWE?
I don't know, because it's tough to say.
Because I feel like your character had, you know, we want to talk about credibility. Your character in NXT had so much credibility.
But I was also ready for something. If I wasn't going to have the opportunity to carry the NXT championship, to see what I was made of, to see if I could carry it or not, or see if I could make a difference in terms of houses, selling tickets and stuff like that. If that responsibility wasn't going to be laid upon me, then I wanted something more, which was the next step up. I wanted to work with the Dolph Ziggler's. I wanted to work with the Seth Rollins, the AJ Styles. I want to work with those guys. I want to see if I can hang. So during that time, towards the end of NXT, once I realized that that championship opportunity was going to come my way, I let me up. Let's go. But knowing now what I know, I would have been way better off staying in NXT, and I asked to go back, but it just wasn't in the cards at that time. It's tough because NXT has, it's a one-hour television show. They have 100 talent down at the Performance Center. They only have X amount of spots, so real estate down there isn't exactly available. So if I was to go back down to NXT, what capacity would it be in? I was asked to be a coach 3 times during my last probably year and a half in NXT, which I love to teach, love to help. That's why Flatbacks is opening up. Flatbacks Training School. Myself and Tyler Breeze are going to be opening up one starting July, next month. So flatbacktraining@gmail.com.
In Orlando?
In Orlando, Apopka, Florida, just on the outside a little bit, but that's a cheap little plug.
No, please, plug away.
Oh, I'll be plugging.
Because there's plenty of people that are watching this right now that are either thinking of being a wrestler or maybe training somewhere that doesn't give great training. So
Credibility. Make sure you get trained by someone who's done something, been somewhere, or who, as Tyler Breeze is, currently somewhere. I'm sorry, I got all sidetracked.
That was going to be my next question anyway. So, you know, you have all this experience, 18 years in the business. You've been asked to be a coach. Are you taking this knowledge you have now? Is that why you want to open up your own training school?
I did a few seminars post-WWE, and there's just a lot of small fundamental things that are very important in terms of moving forward in somebody's career. This business is evolving. It's moving quicker. It's getting bigger and it's moving quicker. And if you're not ready to adapt to that, or you are not in a position to learn properly or be trained properly safely, you might get left behind. You might not even get out of the starting gate. So what myself and Tyler is doing is providing a place to learn properly, learn what's happening currently, learn kind of taking what we have accumulated in our time in NXT, OVW, prior to all that, our time on the indies. We're kind of be able to bring everything to the table and go, here's what we can offer you. This is the template that we followed. We don't guarantee anything. We don't guarantee that you're going to be in WWE, AEW, anywhere else, nothing like that. We can guarantee 2 things: that we will teach you how to keep yourself safe and somebody else safe, and we will teach you how to wrestle. That is it. The rest is up to you.
I actually went to wrestling school when I was 20. I went to WrestlePlex Ontario for, it was Eric Young's
show. Oh, I didn't know that.
Briefly. And then I was at Squared Circle in Toronto Fuego.
Yeah.
And I think that the interesting thing about this is actually taking that step to go through the door and sign up and actually put the work in to be a wrestler is massive. In all the lead up to that, though, what can someone do before they take that huge leap to actually attending wrestling school?
It's that leap. That is the starting point, man. And it was weird. I was on the way over here and I was thinking about some of the questions that you might have asked, because we didn't really...
Yeah, we're just talking.
And It's so weird. You seen the movie A Star Is Born? Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, the world
cried at the end.
Okay, exactly. Who didn't, right? There is one, that movie was phenomenal, but there's one part in that movie, and there's two scenes, and they happen at the exact same time in that movie. So before, when he's singing Shallow, and before she steps out on stage, he's singing his verse, and Lady Gaga's standing there off to the side, and she's looking around like, that thought going through her mind is, I'm scared to death, I'm scared shitless, but if this is going to happen, this is the moment it needs to happen. And then whatever the hell pushes her to do it, her feet start moving, she walks up to the microphone, and she starts singing. The second big moment happens when she kicks into the chorus. And that look on her face where, like, as she's screaming, is, it's happening.
Yeah.
The life is changing right now. Whatever fear you had, you are breaking through. It's the same thing in beginning any venture in life. I can relate it to wrestling. Is like, yeah, you're scared shitless to go through the curtain for the first time. You're worried about what everybody's going to think. You're worried if you're going to fall flat on your face. But that's, I would rather fall on my face and know for sure than never take that step. So go through the curtain. And then there's a really good chance, if you're prepared, that something beautiful will happen during whatever it is you're going through. If it's a wrestling match and it's clicking and the other guy is on point and you're on point and the story you're telling is hitting on all cylinders, you could feel it happening and everything changes.
Do you have like a phrase or a mantra in your life that's really helped your life?
Oh man, I follow motivational quotes on Twitter and stuff like that. Yeah. Just because I like to read just what people through history have just, things that have gotten them through things. I don't really have anything in specific. I wish I had something very clever or very educational to say.
No, this Star is Born story is fantastic.
It's just, you never want, I'm scared to death of regret. I just never want to say, man, I should have. That's my biggest thing. If you can take anything away from this, if there's anything holding you back, and if you're worried about what other people think, especially people you don't know, your chances are you're never going to know them. So why are you wasting your time worrying anyway?
Yeah.
That's the best analogy I can give from that Star is Born, is like, that's that one moment in that movie that was worth that whole, that was an incredible moment. I could relate to that the most.
I think as we wrap this up, a lot of people are going to be asking about your tattoo. So can you show us and maybe tell us a little bit about
okay,
the inspiration?
So this has been...
show it off to the camera.
Yeah, if you guys can kind of see this. This has been a while in the making. So this is the most important piece. This is an angel. And this is my grandmother's name. This is Elda. She, my family never had a lot of money. We still don't. Came from money. So any... you know, big ventures that I went to Japan, or, you know, if I had some bad times in Puerto Rico or Mexico and stuff like that, she was always the one to go, let me know if you ever need anything and I'm there for you. She was always there for me. I would have quit a long time ago if she wasn't in my life, because I wouldn't have been able just to self-sustain my, you know, my habit of being a professional wrestler. So that is for her. That in the middle there is a 10. That is a Roman numeral.
Yes.
Because no matter what happens in my career, this was one of my favorite times in wrestling. And it was the one thing that allowed me to connect to many, many people, which was huge. This is Death holding a clock. The clock is 2:38. That was the time I was born. And the way I kind of equate this is from the second you're born, Death is following you. Death is chasing you. So at some point or another, he catches you. So you want to make sure that you live the best life you can the way you want to, because at some point or another, he's going to catch you. So why not go out on your terms? These are Japanese cherry blossoms. There's 11 of them, because in 2011 I was in Japan, and that's when that big massive earthquake hit. So that's for Japan. And then these are, I can never say it right, plumerias?
You know better than me.
This is a Hawaiian flower, and this is for my Peyton, because this is her favorite flower, and she loves Hawaii. So that reminds me of her every single day.
Wow.
So, and then that. That's, you ever seen The Gray, the movie?
Love the
so there's a poem in there that is recited throughout.
Live and Die on This Day.
Live and Die on This Day.
Yes.
Same thing, same kind of mantra as the holding the clock is, you know, live your life. Live the best life you have every single day, and, you know, go out on your own terms.
We've learned a lot in this interview.
I hope it's good.
This is really good.
I never had a chance to talk about you. So I never got to explain a lot of things, or the perfect 10 for that matter. But no, this is cool, man. I don't get to do a lot of this stuff. So hopefully going forward, I will now.
I really appreciate it. Tell us something about Peyton that we might not know. Because there's going to be a lot of Peyton Royce fans watching.
There's a
this.
Ton of Peyton. Gosh, she's the rock star. She's the rock star of the team going forward. She's the talent. I'll challenge her on the looks part. I'm damn good looking. She's got a pretty face for a lady's face, but I'm... Ain't I the prettiest thing you ever seen? That's Muhammad Ali. I mean, when you see her on camera, she's so funny. She's so entertaining. And spoiler alert, when like she was just over at the house last night, Billy was just over. That's how they are in real life. They're at that. They're like how they are on TV. They're like that at the house, and it drives me nuts. But like they are so funny together. They're so funny on television. But she has the utmost sweetest soul. She has the oldest soul. Funny little tidbit. Our very first date, I'm a little older than her. Our very first date, I told her we're not, you know, we're probably not going to be together long. Like, we can hang out, we can have some fun, but I mean, come on, I'm a little older than you, and, you know, chances of us really working out are, you know, you have a life to live, da da da. And she just went, that's kind of a real shitty thing to say.
I was like, can you do a Peyton impression?
She kind of said,
No, but the accent too. You know?
Oh, absolutely not, absolutely not. She'd butcher me if I even attempted to do it. But I told her we weren't going to kind of work out, and she went, "All right, we'll see." And lo and behold, I was wrong.
And she's still proving you wrong.
She's still proving me wrong, and I couldn't be more happy to be wrong. So yeah, she just got such an older soul, and she's a sweetheart, and you know, she's my best friend, and that's like, oof, I wouldn't be able to do any of this right now if it wasn't for her.
Wow. Can we throw up a 10 as we end things up?
That's all I got left. I got nothing. Boom.
So there you go. A very insightful and interesting chat with Sean Spears and the very first episode of the Chris Van Vliet Show in the books. Thank you for listening. And if you like this, it would mean so much to me if you left a review and shared this and let people know that in addition to my YouTube channel, that the Chris Van Vliet Show here in podcast form exists. So we talked about his contract status with AEW, and just 3 days after he did this interview, he officially signed that deal with AEW. So a big congrats to Sean for that. Thank you to Green Roads for sponsoring the show. Use the code CHRIS15 for 15% off your CBD order at greenroadsworld.com. Also, a big thanks to Samson for the mics and podcasting equipment that we're using to make this happen. This has been fun. Thank you for listening. We are just getting started, my friends.